mind can rest. This they may call an object of desire, a fruitful end they try to reach. But should they try and fail sufficiently to see or gain the goal, this terrace here, and all it must entail of penitence, awaits each slothful soul with torments for its fault. And then beyond this terrace rise a further three, to hold those who were far from feeble but too fond of all the pinchbeck that they thought was gold, the pleasures of the world, which give no joy, which don't ring true, but click like counterfeit. The earth-bound goods fit only to destroy good's essence and to draw love by deceit. Love lost like that is wept for up above in those three circles. But the three distinct divisions of that all-too-faithful love I won't describe now. How they're interlinked will be apparent to your intellect when you, through toil, have learned what to expect. Canto 18. When my exalted teacher reached the end of his discourse, he looked me in the face intently, with a gaze that did not bend, to see if I was satisfied. The place of my last thirst, in fact, was full again with yet another, but I held my peace, saying within myself, "It could be when I ask him all these questions without cease it troubles him." And then I said aloud, "Master, my vision, quickened by your light, sees all your words with clarity endowed. I pray, therefore, dear Father, that you might explain love to me. Love to which, you say, good actions are reduced, and equally their opposites." And he, "Direct the way to me, the eyesight, keen as it may be, of all your understanding. Plain as day the error will strike you about the blind who would be guides. Created to be quick in love, it's quickly moved the mind towards all pleasures. By the merest flick of pleasure it is whipped to action. Your perception takes in from the world outside a sense impression, which it holds before your mind and spreads out both long and wide, so that the mind turns to it. If, so turned, the mind inclines that way, then we must call that inclination love. It is not learned. It's instinct, to be reinforced by all the pleasures you might have. For just as fire moves upwards, as a form that's born to climb to where it most thrives, so into desire the mind thus seized must enter at the time of being taken. For desire moves as the spirit moves it, and may never rest until the thing it loves it truly has in its possession, and so finds the crest of joy. Now you may see how truth's concealed for those who say that all love merits praise just for itself. Its matter stands revealed as good, they think. But here their judgment plays a trick. Because the wax might well be good, that is, the instinct, and the stamp be bad, which is the thing loved. My wits have understood your words. Some of the questions that I had about love's nature are now answered. Yet perplexity increases. For if love is offered us as something we might get from outside, and the soul's not thinking of which foot should fall, but sets foot as it must, there is no merit in which way it goes, crooked or straight. Thus I to him. He. Just as far as reason sees can I disclose the truth to you. Beyond there you must wait for Beatrice, who deals in faith. In men, as in all things, there lies within, innate, an essence, the substantial form. Again, this form, for man, it bears the name of soul, is both united with and yet distinct from matter, which it keeps within a whole specific virtue which is tightly linked to its own action and is not perceived or demonstrated save by its effect, as is the first life in a plant green-leaved. It follows that the human intellect can't have the first idea of how we know about our first ideas and how they came to us, or how desire finds objects so alluring. They're inside you, just the same as the honey-making urge is in the bees. Nor does the primal, central will admit earning of praise or moral penalties. so that your wishes may conform to it. The balance, that is, to your natural urge. There is innate in you to hold the fort a faculty of counsel, thus to merge the two against a yielding. This we ought to call the principle in which is found the merit of your reason, by how well it gathers in our loves from sky to ground, and winnows out the guilt from grain that fell too smoothly to the sickle. Those who went in reason to the roots, the ancient Greeks, unearthed the freedom, realized what it meant, and gave us the great texts in which it speaks. They gave us ethics, clear proofs that though each and every love you burn with must arise out of necessity, the power to reach and guide it is in you. This is the prize, whose endless value Beatrice will teach you of, the noble faculty, free will. Have it in mind, because the chances are she'll speak of it to you there on the hill. The moon was late, and we had come this far without it. It was almost midnight. There it was, to make the stars look scarcer. Like a fiery bucket it moved through the air, its course on those tracks that the sun will strike when, seen from Rome, it plunges down between Sardinia and Corsica. That shade by whose great books Pietola had been honored above all Mantua had laid his head down. I had heard him well. Yes, I, replete with his informed and clear discourse, rambled in drowsiness, but by and by half-sleep was torn awake with sudden force. Some people had come round behind our backs, and as Ismenus and Asopus saw the troops of tumult and the mock attacks along the bank at night when Thebes would roar and prance for Bacchus, so I saw them come around that circle, but with something more to celebrate. For I could tell the drum that drove them was no pagan pulse of blood, but goodwill, and just love. And soon they were upon us, all these runners, like a flood, and two in front cried out in tears, "Praise her! Praise Mary, hastening to the hill!" And this, "Caesar made speed to Spain!" And in the rear the rest cried, "Go, go, it would come amiss to lose time for too little love. We cheer for zeal in grand deeds that bring back to life the green of God's grace." Then my leader said, "You people, in whom fervor runs so rife to wake, maybe what you have left half dead, through lack of will, delay, and negligence, this man who stands here, it's the truth I speak, before the morning sunshine would commence again, would go up, give us what we seek, show us the gap." At which one of that band said, "Follow us, and you will find the break. We need to move, you have to understand. We may not rest. Excuse us if you take our penance for rebuff. I, at one time, was abbot of San Zeno, in the days when Barbarossa ruled Verona. I'm aware Milan still loathes him, but he stays revered where I lived, and there is one there now, Alberto, who has one foot in the grave and must soon shed tears on account of how his monastery is run. No throne will save that lord of grief from using power there in those cloisters, and because he let his son, warped in the body, worse in the mind, to wear the abbot's cowl, a basely born wanton in place of the true shepherd." I don't know if he said more, or else fell silent, as already he had run to pass us so. But thus I heard, and in my mind it has remained. And he that was my help said, "Turn around here. See the two that bear in wrath their teeth while they tell lessons all should learn about historic instances of sloth." They came behind the rest, and as they came they said, "The sea was opened, but they failed to get back to Jordan all the same." They must have meant the Hebrews. And, "They sailed as far as Sicily, but had no thirst for more horizons, and Aeneas left without them. Thus they lived on, and were cursed with lack of glory, of all fame bereft." Then, when these shades were gone so far from us, we couldn't see them, a new thought was born within me that I needed to discuss, and then another, and my mind was torn in all directions, like a tumbling stream. My eyes closed, and my thoughts turned to a dream. Canto 19. In that hour when the whole heat of the day is overcome by Earth's cold and the cold of Saturn, and no longer keeps at bay the cold moon, while what geomancers hold to be their greater future, that small spray of six stars, rises in the east before the dawn, using a path that won't remain long dark for it, and light will close the door, there came to me a woman, racked with pain, into my dream, and she was crossed of eye, and crooked on her feet, with broken hands and sallow, and she stammered fit to die. I stared at her, and as the sun commands warmth into limbs benumbed by the chill night, my look untied her tongue, and in a while she straightened up. Wan features were made bright with color, as love finds the proper style. Her speech set free, she then began to sing, and hard it would have been to turn my mind away from that song, such a charming thing it was. I am the siren, of my kind the sweetest, and the sailors I can fetch in from the sea, and them to me I bind as prisoners of delight. For quite a stretch Ulysses, eager voyager, was held fast by my song. Whoever dwells with me, so thoroughly are all his longings quelled, he rarely leaves. The pretty melody was over, but her lips were not yet closed, when there beside me a new face appeared. A woman holy, vibrant yet composed. Briefly she spoke, in sharp tones to be feared for anger. Virgil, Virgil, who is this? His gaze paid homage to that honest one. With altogether different emphasis, he seized the other, and the thing was done. Tearing her clothes in front, he laid her bare, showing her belly, and the stink of her awoke me, and I heard my guide declare, "Three times I called you, and yet still you were enchanted. Rise now and get out of there. We have to find the gap where you go in." I rose, and high day had already lit the circles from low down where they begin, all the way up the holy mountain. It was full of light. Propelled by the new sun, we went on. As I followed him, my brow, I knew by how it felt, I bore like one whose thoughts weigh down on him, to make him bow like the half-arch of a bridge, and then I heard, "Come, here's the passage." In a voice more sweet and gracious to the ear than any word in this our mortal world we ever meet. The speaker had the spread wings of a swan. He showed us upward in between the walls of flintstone, and we felt, as we moved on, the fanning of his feathers with soft calls of Qui Lucant, which means all those who mourn are to be blessed, for consolation will possess their souls. "By what doubt are you torn?" my guide asked when our new place on the hill was higher than the angels. "Why do you stare at the ground?" And I to him, "I go compelled by much misgiving from a new vision, which to itself has bent me so I can't stop thinking of it." "But it's true," he said. "That ancient witch is mourned nowhere except in circles yet to come. You saw how men are free of her. Enough said. Spare your feet your waverings, and fix before your eyes the real enchantment, the spun flare the eternal king, to mark the joy in store, has lit with the great wheels their starry trace." Just like the falcon, which, when it is hailed, looks first down to its feet, then turns to face the call, and stretches by desire assailed for food, so I was in that cloven place, and went up through the rock to where one takes the circuit. I came out in the fifth round. People were there who wept as the heart breaks. They helplessly lay face down on the ground. "My soul cleaves to the dust," they said with sighs, so deep the words were hard to pick apart. "Elect of God," my poet asked, "whose prize is here to have the anguish in your heart made less acute by justice and by hope? Which is the best way up?" "If you're exempt from lying here on this round of the slope," the answer came, "the route for your attempt"—these words came from a little way ahead— is quickest if your right hand stays outside. After I found that face by what it said, I turned with a mute question to my guide, and gladly he assented with a sign. Free now to act, I drew above that soul whose words had made me note him. These were mine. Spirit whose weeping ripens to a whole without which nobody returns to God. For my sake, stay a while your chief concern. Who were you all? Why do you, in this odd manner, show us your backs? This I would learn, and whether you, when I go back alive into the world, would want me from a boon. And he to me. Just how it should arrive, that heaven turns our backs to it, you soon will know. Know now that Peter was first in my chair. I was Pope Adrian, Count of Lavagna, titled so because that fair stream serves our land. I was the man who proved in 5 weeks what the mantle weighs on him who keeps it from the mud. No load comes close to it. Alas, there were delays before my feet were set on the right road. But when I was made shepherd there in Rome, I saw how life was just a pack of lies. I saw the heart could never be at home. I saw it was impossible to rise in that life, so that this life with no end kindled my love. I, wretched till that hour, separate from God, believed that my best friend was avarice. You see me in the power of its fit penitence. What avarice can do is here declared, so as to purge converted souls. No pain is worse than this in all the mountain. Just as that foul urge kept our eyes low, misled by worldly things, so justice here has sunk them to the earth. Just as that rage reduced to flickerings our love of good, and labor died at birth, so justice here takes care to hold us fast, bound hand and foot, and keeps us for as long as it should please the Lord. From first to last we lie still and outstretched. We were that wrong. I'd knelt, and was about to speak, but when he heard one word he guessed my reverence. What cause, he said, has set you kneeling then? And I. Your dignity commands my sense of fitness. He to me. Brother, set straight your legs and rise. I am, make no mistake, a fellow servant of one potentate, along with you and others. For the sake of those words in the gospel which make clear all earthly marriages are here annulled, be sure of what I mean. I have not here my earthly rank, so try not to be gulled. Now go your way. I would not have you pause longer than this. Your presence interferes with how I weep according to the laws of that full ripening you say my tears will bring me to. Alagia, my niece, lives yonder. By her nature she has all the virtues. May our house leave them in peace, and not corrupt her with its tempting call. For she is all my treasure left unspent, as I lie here in this, my long lament. Canto 20. Against a better will, mere will fights ill. Therefore to please him, this did not please me. I drew the sponge that I had wished to fill out of the water, curiosity unsatisfied. I moved on round the hill, my leader, too, moved, keeping to that part left free from bodies close to the rock, as battlements provide, by builder's art, a walkway for the guards. Too great a stock, the other edge contained, of people who poured from their eyes the evil drop by drop that fills the world. Old wolf, a curse on you! You with your hunger that will never stop for more prey than all other beasts. When, O heavens, by whose wheeling its believed conditions shift and change for living men, when will he come by whom we are reprieved and put the wolf to flight? And on we went, with short, slow steps, and on those weeping shades, their lamentations, I remained intent, until by chance I heard, through his cascades of tears, one up ahead of us call, Ah, sweet Mary! Like a woman giving birth. the meager hostelry below the star, where you lay down your burdens of great worth, tell us how poor you were. And then I heard, Fabricius, consul who did not betray Rome for a bribe, but chose to keep your word, virtue in poverty must far outweigh riches in wickedness. These last words stirred such pleasure in me that I pressed ahead, to know that soul from which they seemed to come. And he went on to tell of how it said Saint Nicholas bestowed a generous sum as dowry on 3 girls who faced disgrace from destitution. Soul who speaks so well of such good, who were you? Why, in this place, do you alone renew the tales you tell of well-earned praise? Be sure your words will be repaid if I get back to life and walk the last part of the road that's left to me. And he, not for that boon of which you talk, comfort from yonder, but because I see such grace in you before death I will speak. Of that most evil tree I was the root, the tree that overshadows with its bleak wide canopy all Christendom. Good fruit is rarely gathered there. But if Douai, Lille, Ghent, and Bruges had sufficient force, they'd take revenge for that fact, which is why, from him who judges all things in due course, I beg an intervention. I was called Hugh Capet, yonder. All the kings of France, called Philip or else Louis, now installed on that throne, have my loins for provenance. I was a Paris butcher's son. The old kings faded. All but one of them, who was, at my insistence, chosen to uphold a cloistered life, and that became his cause. A grey-clad monk, at which I could enfold the reins in my safe hands of government and kingdom, much new power and many friends. Such an abundance that my son's head rose into the vacant crown. From there extends the line of their bones, and we all know those are consecrated. Just as long as that great dowry of Provence had not deprived my line of shame, it more or less stood pat. Of small account, at least it still contrived to do no harm. But then with force and fraud began its rapine. 3 French petty states England gave up, persuaded by the sword. Charles of Anjou, so history relates, was gentle when he killed young Conradin, and sent Thomas Aquinas to his rest with thoughtful tact. I see the times begin when Charles of Valois, at the Pope's behest, comes out of France to Florence. He wants fame for self and people. He arrives unarmed, save for the Judas lance, the shaft of blame, and drives it home so that the city's harmed. Its paunch bursts, and he picks up from the game not land, but sin and shame. And every white is driven out when he lets in the blacks. The more he calls that victory by his right, the more the guilt he has, the grace he lacks. The second Charles of Anjou from his ship was taken prisoner. Now I see him trade his daughter as the pirates crack a whip for other women slaves who must parade, and when the bidding flags they force the price. Oh, avarice! What can you do to us to match what you have done? How can you twice draw to yourself my grasping bloodline thus, so we devour each other? But there's worse, worse than before or after. Philip brings the fleur-de-lis to settle like a curse on where Charles Valois gets away from things and makes him captive, thus a second time mocking the Lord. Once more the vinegar, again the gall, and dying for no crime between 2 living thieves. And this, by far, is not enough for our new pilot, no. Outside the law he sails in all his greed to rob the Templars. Lord, when can I show the joy of seeing you bring what we need, your vengeance, which, while it stays hidden so, makes your wrath sweet? We know that we await a reckoning for sinners. When I cried the bride's name of the Holy Ghost so great, and brought you for more comment to my side, such was for us, as long as day lasts here, the object of our prayer exemplified. But we invoke the worst when night draws near. In darkness we call up Pygmalion. Gold fever made a traitor and a thief, and worse. By his untamed hand, death was done to his own sister Dido's husband. Grief for her, but gain for him. Did anyone know misery like the greedy guts-in-chief, King Midas, who was granted his fond prayer to have the world turn golden at his touch, and now forever all men fight for air, laughing at him? And all here just as much remember foolish Achan, how he stole the spoils at Jericho and earned a hail of stones from Joshua, and now the whole anguish he feels again. And we assail Sapphira and her husband with our scorn, they who took money that the people willed to the apostles. And the horse kick borne by Iliodorus after he had filled his pockets to the temple we salute. The name of Polymestor, king of Thrace, who murdered Polydorus and, to boot, filched all his wealth, we grant a lasting place in infamy. And the last one on the list, Crassus, you drank gold. Did you like the taste? For that triumvir had a grasping fist and died of it, and in his mouth the waste of his great love was poured, but he had missed the moment when he might have lived the proof that avarice is loss. Some of us speak forth boldly here, and others more aloof speak low. The ardor, strong or weak, compels our voice with force the more or less, and thus, although I seemed alone just now, we all talk day by day of what we bless, the good. But I was loudest. That was how you picked me out. We had already left Hugh Capet, and were out to cover ground as fast as we could go, when the whole heft of that great mountain shook and moved around like something getting set to fall. A chill seized me as if I'd been sent to my death. Did Delos, the floating island, by Jove's will, set fast so that Latona might give breath to heaven's twin eyes, ever shake this hard before Apollo and Diana stood on earth made firm? My master was my guard. He drew close to convince me this was good, as on all sides arose a mighty shout. "Fear not! I am your guide!" was one thing heard. Also a cry of Gloria rang out, and In excelsis Deo chased that word into the ear, although that close about I heard the best and was not always sure, such was the noise. Unmoving in suspense, we stood surrounded by that sweet uproar, as once the shepherds were deprived of sense by what the cry they heard said was in store for them and all mankind, something immense. But then it ended, and the trembling ceased, and we could take once more our sacred path. The shades that lay there, having thus released their outburst, melted in the aftermath, their usual weeping. Never did ignorance goad me to know, if rightly I recall, as it did then in that twin circumstance of song and earthquake. But since that was all there was to see and hear, and time was short, I dared not ask, and could not, on my own, work out the implications. Lost in thought, too shy to ask a question, left alone behind my guide, I went on past that long line of the ones who weep at their own song. Canto 21. The natural thirst that's never quenched, if not by the same sweet water that Samaria's most humble woman begged might be her lot, tormented me, and haste urged me, and as I hurried on that crowded way behind my leader, a compassion for the just vengeance that made them weep welled in my mind. And lo, as Luke recalls in words we trust as from a witness, when Christ reappeared out of the tomb's mouth and was seen by two there in his way just so to us, there neared a shade behind our backs, while all we knew was that which lay before us, and we saw nothing of him until he spoke. God yield you peace, my brothers. Virgil's gesture bore acknowledgment for what had been appealed, but then he spoke. Alas! God never will for me. But may the faithful court on high that keeps me exiled hopelessly until the end of time bring you in peace where I can never go, the assembly of the blessed. And how, the shade asked as we speedily went on, if you're unworthy of this test, have you been brought so far on stairs that he built for one purpose? And my teacher said, look on the marks borne by this man, and see an angel trace them so he might be sped to where the righteous reign. But since the fate lattices, spinning that thread day and night, which is our life, has not yet the full rate of flax from Clotho, who selects the right amount for all alive, and loathes and packs the distaff, so his soul, your sister and mine too, could not alone make tracks this high, because by nature it is banned from seeing in our way through intellect. And thus was I drawn from hell's yawning jaws to guide him, and will guide him, I expect, as far as reason reaches with its laws. But can you tell us why the mountain shook so violently just then, and why we seemed to hear one giant shout, which surely took all of the souls sent here to be redeemed down to its wave-washed base? Thus questioning, he put the thread's end through the needle's eye of my desire so neatly that the thing I wished to know made me less thirsty by the measure that my hope was raised. Whereat the other said, the mountain's holy laws do not brook the disorderly, or that which injures custom. This place, for that cause, is free from change. Only when heaven calls itself unto itself are changes made, but only then, and therefore no rain falls, or hail, or snow, or dew, and there is laid no carpet of hoar frost, not anywhere beyond the three-step staircase you have seen. There are no clouds here, whether dense or rare, nor lightning flash, nor has there ever been Iris the rainbow, who down there below will bridge the sky to echo the sunshine. Nor does the wind's friend, the dry vapour, go higher than that third step which draws the line where Peter's vicar sets his feet. Although the mountain lower down might sometimes shake, a little or a lot, it will not be up here where we are subject to a quake from wind the earth hides. If to me the reason is a mystery, still I'm sure it trembles when one's soul feels purified, so it may finally arise and soar on its ascending path, the upward glide, and then we hear the shout you heard before. Pureness of soul is by the will alone proved true, and then the soul, set free at last to change its place by no will of its own, is taken by surprise. The will holds fast the soul, and for the soul it will prevail. Until that time the soul might will indeed, but set beside desire its will is frail. Desire for sin, and then the equal need for penitence, that mirror-image urge inspired by holy justice. I have lain 500 years and more in pain to purge my sin, and only now feel my will gain its freedom for the flight to re-emerge on a better threshold. That was why you felt the earthquake, and you heard the spirits shout their praises to the Lord. May they be dealt the same great benefit, all the devout throughout the mountain, and soon make the climb. He spoke thus. Since the draught is more enjoyed the more the thirst, I lack the words and rhyme to say how much I gained from that filled void. Then my wise leader said, now is the time. When I see how you're tangled in the net, and how you are let loose, I see why here it trembles and why you rejoice. Now set my mind at rest and let the truth appear, and tell me who you were. Then you can let me gather from your words why you have spent so many centuries here lying down. When goodly Titus, that soul said, was lent help from the holder of the highest crown to raise Jerusalem, a gesture meant as vengeance for the blood the gashes spilled to pay off Judas. Then I bore the name that lasts best, and is most with honour filled, the name of poet. Yes, I had that fame, but not the faith. Still it was sweet, my song. I, from Toulouse, was drawn to Rome. My brows were decked with myrtle, Still after so long, men yonder speak my name, which yet endows my themes with dignity. It's Statius. I sang of Thebes at first, Achilles next. That second subject I could not discuss fully for lack of time. In each context, the spark that lit my fire came from the blaze that lit a thousand fires. I mean, of course, the Aeneid. In my poetry, it plays the roles of nurse and mother, spring and source. Without it, I'd have weighed a drachma, less. To have lived when Virgil lived. Here, in this place, I would have spent a year more in duress before my banishment gave way to grace, just for the chance of treading the same ground. At these words, Virgil fixed me with a look that said in silence, "Silence." But he found the will cannot do all things by the book, for tears and laughter are close followers of passions, since they tend to spring from them, and with a truthful passion it occurs most often that we're likely to condemn their insolence. But still, I only smiled like someone hinting. The shade held his peace and searched into my eyes as if beguiled by something puzzling that might find release just where expression most resides. Your glance showed mirth just then. That it may end in good. Your labor, please explain that merry dance. Now I am held two ways. There's one that would have me keep silent, and the other seeks the opposite. My sigh is understood by my guide. Fear not. Now be one who speaks, and tell him what he so much craves to learn. And I. You wonder, old soul, at my smile, but I would have a greater wonder burn its way into your mind. For all this while, plainly before you, as he guides my eyes on high, it has been Virgil standing here. Virgil, from whom you took the gift as prize, to sing of men and make the gods appear. And if another cause you did surmise for my smile, know it has to be untrue. Put it aside. The reason was your voice, the praise it spoke of him. I smiled for you, because my secret pleasure left no choice. He bent down to embrace my teacher's feet. But Virgil said, "Brother, it's just no use. You are a shade, and it's a shade you meet." And Statius, rising, said, "My one excuse is my great love for you. It's burning heat. I clean forgot, because I felt so much, that shades are here to see, but not to touch." Canto 22. Our guiding angel who had led us here to the sixth circle we had left behind. One of my scars he'd made to disappear from my face, and as a matter for the mind, he had declared to us that those who thirst sufficiently for righteousness are blessed. His message terminating with the first word of the verse, pronounced without the rest, just, "Sitiunt," they thirst. And I went on lighter than in the other stairwells. I followed the swift souls up where they had gone, without much work. I hardly had to try. And Virgil said, "Love, lit by one virtue, always ignites another, though its flame appear only without." And thus it's true that from the moment Juvenal in fame came down to Limbo and made known to me your fondness, Statius, my own good will towards you had a reciprocity as great as ever possibly could fill the heart of one for one unknown. So now these stairs to me will seem short. But pray tell, and as a friend forgive my nerve for how I wax familiar, just how it befell your breast was occupied with avarice, as well as all the wisdom your seal brought. In the beginning Statius smiled at this, and then replied, "In truth one would have thought, though your each word makes my heart more content as token of your love, things sometimes seem to give false matter for bewilderment, because their cause is hidden. Thus I deem your question to me makes plain your belief that I was grasping in the other life, doubtless because that sad flaw was the chief mark of my circle here. Yes, it was rife. No, then, my vice was just the opposite. I was a prodigal, and this excess thousands of moons have punished. Done with it, I can say now that I first found redress for my bad habits when I read those lines where you, deploring human nature, cried, "Thrice cursed gold hunger, to what dark designs do you not drive men to be satisfied?" Had I not read that, I'd be rolling weights and jousting dismally. I learned our hands can spread like wings, and spending dissipates, and I repented, as of the demands of other sins. Many will rise again with cropped hair, who have lost through ignorance their due repentance. They shall live as men, their last hour playing games with their last chance. Know, too, that each sin's counter-sin is here. Keeping the vigil with its opposite, consumed by its own juice. Though I appear to be among the avaricious, it is not for that I weep like them. I fear it's for the contrary that I grieve so. "Now when you sing," the poet said who wrote the Bucolics, "about Jocasta's woe, caused by two warring sons, there's not a note lent to you there by history's muse Cleo, that indicates the one faith was yet yours, without which mere good deeds are not enough. If that be so, what brought you to the shores of light? What sacred sun or earthly stuff that makes a candle, so that you could raise your sails and steer behind the fishermen?" And the other, "It was you that turned my gaze toward Parnassus, so that I began to drink in its cool caves. Yes, it was you, first after God, that set my mind alight. You were the guide whose lamp shows the way through to those behind him as he goes by night. Not for himself, but to make others wise, he shines. 'The age,' you said, 'turns new again. Justice returns, the first days take fresh guise, and out of heaven a new race of men descends.' A poet and a Christian, I, because of you. But to be clear just how, I'll set my hand to stir a deeper dye and color in my outline for you now. The waiting world was pregnant everywhere with the true faith, sown by the messengers from the eternal realm. Your words were there, the ones I spoke, and so in tune with theirs I formed the habit of frequenting these new preachers. In my eyes they came to seem so holy that Domitian's cruelties against them saw me trying to redeem their tears with mine. While I was there beyond, I helped them. Their straight ways made me deplore all other sects. So moved I pledged my bond. I'd been baptized in secret well before I brought the Greeks to threaten in my lines the Theban rivers. But for fear, I hid, a closet Christian making pagan signs, and this lukewarmness about what I did earned me 400 long years without cease of touring the fourth circle. Tell me, then, you that first raised the curtain to release my vision of the good of those four men I named, Caecilius and Varius, Terence and Plautus, are they damned to hell? If so, in which part? This we must discuss while we ascend this hill. Those four, as well as Perseus and I, my leader said, are with the Greek most favored by the milk of the muses. In the first ring of the dead blind prison were the elders of our ilk, the ones that raised us proudly we invoke. Them and their singing mountain. In that place with us, and I can't name them at a stroke, there are too many, you can see the face of Antiphon, and know Euripides, Simoniades and Agathon, each Greek whose brow wore laurels once. To please you more, I'll mention those of whom you speak. Ismene and Antigone, Thetis. The list was long. But finally the two poets were silent. Well content with this exchange, from having talked as poets do, they took the chance to look around them, freed from climbing in the walls. The hours that drew the sun, one handmaid always in the lead each hour, were four down, and the fifth was in the harness, burning horn upright. "I think," my leader said, "the best way to begin is with our right side outward to the brink, and then bear left, as usual, round the wall. Just so our habit served there as a rule, and off we went with scarce a doubt at all, because that soul from the elected school agreed with us. Those two walked on ahead, talking of poetry and how it's made. I walked behind and drank in what they said, but soon their pleasant talk about our trade was interrupted by a tree that stood square in the way, and it was full of fruit. And all the fruit smelled sweet as it looked good, and as a fir scanned upward from the root, tapers from branch to branch toward the tip, so this tree tapered downward, so that none, I think, should climb it. Some high lip of the cliff that walled our pathway spilled and spun a fall of clearest water, which dispersed among the leaves above. The two approached the tree, and from among its boughs there burst a warning voice, as if they had encroached. "You may not eat this food!" Then it went on. Mary dwelt more upon the marriage feast, its honor and completeness, than upon her own mouth, which up here has never ceased to intercede for you. In times long gone, a thirsty Roman woman was content with water. Nor did Daniel eat his fill, but spurned the king's feast always, and this meant he gained in wisdom by his frugal will. As beautiful as gold was the first age. Hunger made acorns tasty, thirst made sweet nectar of every brook, so you can gauge how satisfied the Baptist was to eat the locust and sip honey. Every page about this in the gospel shows, therefore, his greatness and his glory. Less is more. Canto 23. While through the tree's green leaves I strained my eyes, as one who watches hawks and sees them waste his life, my more than father was more wise. "Come, son, for only so much time is placed at our disposal. We must use it well." I turned my face, and turned at the same speed my steps, after the sages and the spell of what they said, and having that to heed, the going cost me nothing. Then, "O Lord, open my lips," we heard in Latin, wept and sung in tones that brought with one accord delight and grief. And I said as we stepped, "Sweet Father, what is this I hear?" And he, "Perhaps shades who, while going, loose the knots of debt." And when absorbed in reverie, a group on foot will not ease by a jot their speed when overtaking strangers, see them turn their heads and look, but keep their pace. Just so a crowd of souls came from behind, quicker than us, yet silent, with the face of piety, although they seemed to find in us the cause of wonder. Each was dark and hollow in the eyes, and pale of cheek, so wasted that the withered skin took stark shape from the bone. What once had bloomed was bleak. I don't believe even Erysichthon, punished by Ceres with a raging lust to eat and eat till all the food was gone, looked quite so haggard when he realized just one source of meat was left to fall upon. He waited, starving, till he was the crust that he could not resist. "Now see," I said within myself, "there is Jerusalem revenged, which went for months on end unfed, and one called Mary set a mark for them by eating her own child. Their eye-pits were like settings on a ring without the gem, and he who thinks those sockets can confer the letter M on faces would have found O-M-O to mean a man, stamped loud and clear on each of theirs the deep signs of a sound. And who could know, who had not been up here, how just a hint of water and mere scent of fruit, by the sheer craving they instilled, could bring about such grave disfigurement? Keen curiosity was unfulfilled regarding what had starved them. Why were they so lean? And I did not yet know the cause of their sad scurf. But one shade stared my way from deep inside his head without a pause, and then cried, "I'm in luck, what can I say?" But looks alone I never would have known who this one was, but in his voice was plain what in his face was shriveled to the bone. That spark revived the knowledge in my brain of his changed features, and I recognized Forese, fellow sonneteer and friend. He said, "Try not to be too long surprised by this tight scab that works to make an end of my skin's color, or by how my flesh is lacking, but just tell me about you. And if the news is true, it will be fresh. And these who go with you, who are these two? Speak now." And I, "Your face, for which I wept when it was dead, now gives me no less grief. Seeing how very little has been kept of what I knew, that there seems no relief from the distortion, tell me, in God's name, what is it wastes you? Do not make me speak while I so marvel, for the tongue falls lame whose mind is elsewhere." And he, "From the peak we call God's will eternal, virtue falls as water to the tree we left back there, whose fragrance is so sweet it cruelly galls the famished body that you see I wear. All those who gave way to their appetite beyond all reason, and so now must weep as they go singing, here hope that they might, through thirst and hunger, once more get and keep their holiness. The sweet scent of the fruit and of the spray spread over the green leaves can only make the craving more acute to eat and drink. And anyone who grieves will do so often as he goes around this level with its other trees of pain. Or let's say solace, for it will be found how that desire will lead us to the main tree of them all, the one that made Christ cry the name of God, when from his every vein the blood that freed us poured, he cried, 'Eli!' And I to him, 'Forese, not 5 years have passed since you exchanged your life on earth for something better, and you're here, in tears. If your sin's power died before the birth of penitence, the good grief that weds men again to God, I thought to find you in the first part of this hill, there where, again, time is made good by time, and they can win those waiting recompense for tardiness.' Then he to me, 'It is my Nella brings me here so soon to drink, and drinking bless, sweet wormwood of the torments. She does things, she prays, she sighs, she weeps floods, that have set me free from those first circles, from the slope where all must wait. As deep as love can get was my love for my widow, now my hope, and she is loved by God now all the more for being in her good deeds so alone. For in Sardinia there's a running sore, Barbaggia, whose women are less prone to rank immodesty than in the pit I left her in, our Florence, yours and mine. Brother, what words of mine would you think fit? A time that soon must come I can divine, when from the pulpit it shall be declared that brazen women of our native town must not go walking with their nipples bared. Did ever law need to be handed down that barbarous women, even Saracens, should cover themselves up? Some code of fear on which a simple sense of shame depends? But had our shameless creatures an idea of how swift heaven has prepared their fate, their mouths already would be open wide, all set to howl, for if I estimate the prospects rightly, they will meet a tide of sorrow before he who now is lulled to sleep with song can show a hairy jowl. But, brother, you by whom the sun is dulled, at you we gaze. Your news, please, fair or foul. Not only I, but all of us ask this." And I to him, "Recall what you once were with me, and I with you. I'd be remiss to overlook the way we used to stir a mess of bad taste. It was my guide turned me from that life. The other day it was, when that one's sister, where the high sun burned, I pointed. Here shone full. It is because of him that I came through the deep dark night of all the truly dead, with my real form that follows him. He drew me to the light, and his attentions, generous and warm, have brought me up this hill that sets you right, you that the world made crooked. On this climb around the mountain he will be with me, he promises, always until the time that I see Beatrice. There I'm bound to be without him. It is Virgil who thus speaks to me," I pointed. "And this other one is he for whom the slopes and troughs and peaks Of this your kingdom shook as they've just done, because the mountain knew, deep in its heart, another soul was ready to depart. Canto 24. The going did not slow the talk slowed not the going. Saying what we said, we went on with a rapid, buoyant walk, like ships in a fair wind. They looked twice dead. The shades that drew amazement at me through their deep eye-ports, aware I was alive. I went on with my talk, referring to the shade of Statius. "He will arrive on high," I said, "more slowly than he could, perhaps, because of Virgil. But now tell me of Picarda. Also, if I should take note of any among these so well equipped to gaze at me." "More fair than good, more good than fair. My sister is on high, triumphant in Olympus, glory-crowned." He said first that, then this. "Here we must try to name names when we can, our faces ground to dust with fasting, drained completely dry. That one is Bonaggiunta, who made rhymes in Lucca, and beyond him, one who held the whole church in his arms in recent times, Martin of Tours, a great heart too impelled by greed, and so his face more than the rest is seamed, and he must fast to purge the eels of Lake Bolsena that he thought the best, and drowned in wine and roasted. The mind reels." And many others he named one by one, and none of them seemed displeased to be named. Not one dark look while this was being done. For if I in the world could make them be famed for being saved, then harm there would be none. Ubaldin de la Pila I saw chew on emptiness because he'd lingered so, and Bonifacio, archbishop, who pastured his flocks high up and, as we know, set his expenses higher. I saw, too, Forlì's fine man Marchese, who had space down there to drink with far more thirst than here, and yet he never drank his fill. The place was full of them. Yet as one does with sheer numbers, I noticed some above the crowd, and so returned to Bonaggiunta. He seemed most to want to know me, and aloud, but only just, he muttered this for me. "Gentucca," meaning little folk. The word barely emerged from where he felt the pain of justice most, his throat. But having heard, I spoke, believing he might brave the strain. "Spirit that seems so eager to be freed to tell me something," I said. "Have a care to say it plainly, and thus meet the need of both yourself and me." "Back there," he said, "a woman's born who will, indeed, bear glowing fruit, though she does not yet wear the wimple of the wed, and she will make my city please you. Armed with this forecast, you go your way again, and if you take a wrong turn from my muttering, at last the facts will make all clear. But now reveal if you I see before me really made the new rhyme, lyrical as well as real, the craft of language at its highest grade, beginning with, 'You ladies who know love.'" And I to him, "Yes, I am one that when inspired by love, notes what is spoken of within, and makes it sing to other men." "Brother," he said, "now I can see the knot that held back Jacopo and all the school of Sicily, Guittone and his lot of Tuscans who wrote verse to the old rule, and kept me, too, short of the sweet new style I hear now. I see well how love dictates the movement of your pen, which, all the while the heart speaks, follows close and never waits. It's certain this was far from true for us, and anyone who sets out to detect a difference will find no more to discuss between our style and yours but that aspect. The things we hinted at, you said outright." And he was silent, as if satisfied with his analysis. As cranes in flight along the Nile in winter make a wide array sometimes, and sometimes pull in tight to get more speed by going one behind the other, so these people faced around, and quickened step as if all of one mind, by leanness and the wish to cover ground, made light of foot. Like one who cannot find more breath to run, and lets his fellows pass, and walks until his chest no longer heaves, Forese waved away that holy class, and stayed with me, and as to one who leaves too soon to suit us, spoke, "How long before I see you here again?" And I, "How long am I to live? I don't know. Yet this shore I'd sooner see again than know the wrong of where I've been put to live, which more and more divests of good from day to day, with ruin waiting down the trail." "And I," he said, "can see now who will pay for that disaster. Dragged by a beast's tail towards the valley out of which no way leads back again, my brother Corso's drawn faster with every foul step of the beast, until he is dashed down and left there, torn revoltingly to pieces, a crow's feast. These wheels," he pointed upwards, "will not turn too often before what I have to tell will be more plain that I can say. You'll learn. But now I have to leave you. A short spell of time is precious here. I lose too much by lingering." And as a horseman rides out at a gallop, proud of losing touch with his brigade, and goes to where resides the glory of the first encounter, just that way he went from us with longer strides, and back on earth we would have eaten dust, I and the two great worldlings. We remained, and when he was so far ahead my eyes lost sight of him, no matter how they strained. As my mind lost his words, to my surprise, the branches of another tree appeared, as we came round the bend, and it was full of fruit and green, and I saw, as we neared, people beneath it lift, as if to pull fruit free, their hands toward the foliage, crying I know not what, as children do, who thoughtless beg and get into a rage of begging when the thing they beckon to, unbidden, is held up to make them keen. Then off they went, as if they realized how futile all their clamoring had been. And to the tree that held the things they prize we came, the mighty tree which can withstand so many prayers and tears. "Do not come close. Pass on, for far above and not at hand there is the tree Eve ate of for her dose of knowledge, and this one is just a sprig from that." Emerging from the leaves' green shrouds, the hidden voice went on, "Recall how big with food and wine those creatures of the clouds, the cursed centaurs, reeled under the blows of Theseus when they chased women. Keep also in mind the Hebrew soldiers, those who at the fountain drank themselves to sleep, so Gideon, when he took Midian, left them behind." So passing on, we kept to the wall side, regaled with tales of men and gluttony and what it earned. We stepped, spread out, a thousand steps along, the lonely road, each wrapped in silent thought, concerned with appetite, its right and wrong.